Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Cognitive Recalibration Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Shravan. We've got Tyrone here with us.
Hello.
And we're back after a bit of a break because of several things that have happened in the studio as well as outside of the studio. So I think we mentioned last time the kitchen was being renovated, which held up our plans to do video. So we're still kind of sorting out the house, but that's going to happen pretty soon. Hopefully, maybe we can do it for Guardians next week. And the other thing is we got a puppy, Mr. Remy, who has really kept us busy for the last 2 to 3 weeks. Anyone who's got a puppy before will understand what I've been through for the last couple of weeks in terms of sleep deprivation in particular. But he's full of energy, and he's, as a result, we're lacking a lot of energy, but we're back.
Dog's crazy. It's cute though. He's real cute.
Yeah.
But he's pretty crazy.
You get to see him when we do video at some stage, when he's not like going to tear up the tables.
Yeah. Kill everyone.
But we're also joined by a special guest, Bhaskar, returning guest. He's joined us for quite a few episodes, but, thought we'd get him back for this one, just because we're talking about two movies, actually.
We're talking about a movie with a dog in it.
There's a movie with a dog in it, and there's
John Dick.
And there's a movie with a donkey in it. Donkey Kong.
Yoshi's kind of like a dog, isn't he?
He's a dinosaur, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Mario treats him like a dog.
He's like his pet, is he?
Yeah.
Is he like a pet? Like a pet, yeah, like a wild animal.
So. Yeah. So we're talking about Super Mario Brothers, the movie, and John Wick Chapter 4.
John Wick, yeah.
I thought Bhaskar would be in particular for Super Mario, just because we spent most of our childhood playing Nintendo.
Yes.
In particular, yeah. Nintendo 64, but all the consoles that came after that as well. So
definitely. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Thanks for having me back. It feels like it's been a very, very long time since we've had a proper video gaming kind of podcast or a, you know,
yeah,
like a fan cast kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't think we've only reviewed the Spider-Man games. I don't think we've done many
games. No. You don't play that many.
Yeah, games. I don't play enough games for me to be able to review games.
Are these the movie tie-in games or the one on PlayStation Spider-Man?
The PS4
one.
Spider-Man games. That's the only one. And we did Miles Morales and the original.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, since then we've done video game movies though. So Uncharted.
Yeah, some of my favorites, actually. They're always good, and they're never bad, generally.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. So I thought we'd start with John Wick, since that was actually the first movie to release out of these two, even though it's the last one that we all saw. Bit of background on the movie. So
No background.
Yeah,
moving on. Background. Yeah.
It's directed by Chad Stahelski, who directed all the previous John Wick movies. We were discussing this just before the podcast, but David Leitch is uncredited for the first movie, who went on to direct Deadpool 2 and then Bullet Train as well. But this one is just directed by Chad Stahelski. Obviously, Keanu Reeves is back, but my memory of all of the John Wick movies is pretty fuzzy because they all kind of blend into one for me because they're like
coins, they're all, hotels,
yeah,
guns,
death,
yeah,
pencils.
I didn't watch the third one, and this isn't a spoiler, but I don't think this is a spoiler. But I was surprised that everyone just had a bulletproof suit in this.
There you go.
Is that yeah.
That was introduced in John Wick 3?
Was that in the third one? Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
At the start of this movie, just every guy has a bulletproof suit.
that must not make sense. You're watching it like, hey, how are these guys just lifting up their blazer and then deflecting bullets?
Not getting hurt. Yeah.
What is this shit movie?
So the other cast members got Donnie Yen. Was Donnie Yen in?
No, I think this is Rogue his first one.
In Chapter 3? He wasn't.
No, this is his first one.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't
Rogue One.
Yeah, he was in Rogue One. Rogue One.
I went straight.
And he was blind in that.
He's blind in that as well. Yeah. He is, yeah.
Yeah,
he's blind in this.
It's a particular martial arts style that he uses that he likes. But yeah, no, I don't think he was in the John Wick universe or even mentioned beforehand.
Is it Man?
Yeah.
Yes, he is. And we've also got Bill Skarsgård, who plays the sort of central.
I think this is his first one as well.
Yeah.
Was he in the third one?
I don't think so. No. Yeah.
It wasn't the third one. This is, most of them are new characters apart from
Ian McShane.
Yeah, Ian McShane, Lawrence Fishburne, and like.
Lance Reddick.
Yes, Lance Reddick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, rest in peace. Such a good actor.
Yeah, this is actually his final performance, I think, in terms of movie releases. Yeah.
I'm really curious to see if, like, they changed the actual, like, what they chose to put in the movie.
Yeah.
I think they would have put him in more if they knew.
Yeah.
But that's a slight spoiler. People probably have seen this if they...
But yeah,
we'll keep it spoiler free.
We'll do spoilers a bit later. So we'll keep it non-spoiler for now. Other background, so it released on the 24th of March. Runtime is 169 minutes. So it's the longest of the John Wick movies, and it's pretty long. I'll say that. We went to a 9:45 show, which was... It's usually a mistake, like normally, but it was a very bad mistake on my side, just because I'm generally sleep deprived at the moment. So going to such a late show for a 3-hour movie was not great. So I was definitely tired watching this, but
you fell asleep for 10 minutes.
I think so, but you'd have to tell me because I think I missed more than I think I missed.
Yeah, because I didn't realize you fell asleep, but then we got out of the theater and I'm like, you look like you just fell asleep.
Yeah.
It's a nice movie to fall asleep to if you like a lot of noise and theater shaking and rock.
I feel like this is a great movie to watch with the sound off while you're doing something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just have like stuff happening on the screen.
Well, you can have the sound on, I guess, but like stuff happens and you just watch the stuff. Like you don't need to care about the dialogue or anything.
Yeah.
Well, there isn't much dialogue for a majority of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough, actually. There's a lot of exposition, but I think when it gets to it,
it gets to a certain point,
There's a point where it starts, the action starts, and it just doesn't let up.
It reminds me of Mad Max Fury Road, where it's just like non-stop action from start to finish.
So Chapter 3, we can probably spoil Chapter 3, but like the first like 45 minutes of Chapter 3 is just action. Like it's essentially just back-to-back action, and then it slows down a bit. But it does start a bit slower, actually, this one, than Chapter 3. But then, it really picks up later. Budget was $100 million, so I think it's the highest budget of all the John Wick movies. Interesting fact about the first John Wick movie, apparently it was planned to go straight to video, like direct-to-video, not a theatrical release, because... Think about when it came out. I think it came out 2014. And this type of genre of like just a crazy shootout action movie was not like a big thing back then. And Keanu Reeves was
not a big thing.
Yeah. I mean, he was known, but he's not like there was definitely a resurgence in his popularity since John Wick.
Oh, yeah. John Wick was probably the reason. Like before then,
I can't even remember what he was doing before John Wick.
Yeah. I think the last time most people heard was, you know, he just finished doing the Matrix series in 20 years ago. So we hadn't seen him in the film. There was a massive break.
He did 47 Ronin. That's that's one that I remember.
Yeah. Which is very interesting as a film.
He did. What's that one where the world's ending?
The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah, he was in that, wasn't he? Yeah.
Funny thing is that the music composer for 47 Ronin went on to become the main score and composer for The Ghost of Tsushima for the PlayStation 4.
Oh, yeah.
So he just did a lateral shift, samurai movie to samurai game.
But yeah, he's really had a resurgence.
Yeah. Since the Matrix trilogy, I'm just looking through his filmography. So he did like The Lake House, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah, 47 Ronin, Knock Knock. But really not much in between, to be honest. Like, not many known films.
One thing I do remember distinctly is before John Wick even was announced or came out, for many, many years, he would be, like, on Instagram or on social media, like, posting videos of his, like, judo, taekwondo, jiu-jitsu, his martial arts routines, that he was still very, very active. And if anyone came close to Tom Cruise's level of, like, being crazy fit and active in their, like, 50s, John Wick is the first person that comes to mind because his martial arts and his, I never knew he was like into, you know, firearm training, but I think the martial arts aspect was always there.
Yeah. And this is his filmography since John Wick. So after that, he did
Matrix Resurrections.
He did Matrix Resurrections. Even like the movies he did afterwards were pretty unknown.
He's in that movie on Netflix with it's like that rom-com. Have you seen that movie? He's got one of the best cameos.
We watched this like 2 days ago. Yeah. Always Be My Maid.
Always Be My Maid. Yeah. He gets punched. He gets punched in the face, doesn't he?
Yes.
Or does he punch?
No, he gets punched. They play something. Oh, he asks to get punched, right? He's like, punch me. Yeah.
No, because the guy makes a rap about Keanu Reeves. Or Keanu Reeves does the rap. Keanu Reeves is dating the girl.
And he plays himself, right, in that movie.
Yes. But like a douchebag version of himself.
Yeah. And there was another film where he made a cameo where he's in a restaurant listening to music. What was that one? Where he's like, he's playing himself again, I think. I forgot what it was, but it was a recent film. He's cameoing like in a restaurant listening to music and crying. Like one of those pretentious patrons at a restaurant that just is like,
I don't know if I've seen that one.
I forgot what that was. I can't believe I forgot what that was. But yeah, I think he's self-aware that he knows that he's got that kind of cult following of Keanu fans. And I'm not sure, was he in the film Keanu?
He was.
Yeah.
He's credited. The cameo.
Voice cameo.
Nice.
Yeah, so he's credited as being in that. And then he was in Toy Story 4 as...
That stunt motorcyclist.
Duke Kaboom. And then he was Bill and Ted Face the Music after that.
Oh, yeah.
And then Matrix Resurrections. And then he was Bruce Wayne in DC League of Super Pets.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Nice.
Which we haven't seen that one yet. And apparently he's going to be in Ballerina, which is the follow-on. But we can talk about that.
Prequel.
We can talk about that. Oh, okay. Yeah. We'll talk about that in spoilers anyway.
Prequel to this series?
Oh, it's set in between... two and three, or three and four, one of those. Oh, yeah,
it's probably three because there's a ballerina segment in three, if you remember.
Yeah.
Well, it's like set during three or something.
Inside the Roma Rosca house, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Just so Ana de Armas is playing.
Oh, of course. Yeah, she has martial arts training as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched that movie on Apple TV, Ghosted.
Oh, yeah.
This could be like a really quick thing. It's got Ana de Armas and Chris Evans.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Like, it's not... It's a straight-to-streaming movie, so expect what you want from that.
Well, I've got a free trial. Might as well watch it.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
I'll quickly cover a bit of box office about John Wick. So, this is one of those franchises that progressively made more money as it went on, which is, like, the opposite of something like Star Wars, which progressively made less money as the trilogies went on.
Except for the original trilogy.
Except for the original one. Yeah, but the... prequel and the sequel.
Prequels made like steady money, I think, all three of them.
The first one made the most.
First one made
and the second one less. And then the third one about the same.
Yeah. And I think the sequels, it was a pretty
steady decline.
Yeah. Well, it was
well, not really steady. It was pretty steep.
But so John Wick Chapter 4 is a franchise record in terms of worldwide box office. So $365 million worldwide. So it's just gone past Chapter 3, which made about $330 million.
Nice.
The first one, you know, it's got a, it wasn't a, it made money with respect to its budget, but it wasn't a huge blockbuster hit. So it made $75 million on a budget of $30 million. So first one was a budget of $30 million. Then it went up to $40 million for Chapter 2, $40 million for Chapter 3. And then this one was a big jump to $100 million. So, yeah, another franchise record. So interesting this year. So we've had a lot of sequels that have come out, like Scream 6, Creed 3. All of them are the franchise topper. So, like, Creed 3 is the highest-grossing Rocky franchise movie of all time. So, including the 1970s movies.
Right.
What about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania?
That's one anomaly. Yeah, I suspect it could be to do with COVID as well, like COVID ending.
Yeah.
The movie market resurging after, you know, what Top Gun did, bringing people back into the theaters. And I think people are now coming back into the theaters in greater levels than they were before the pandemic?
Yes. Yeah. For certain movies.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah.
Certain cinematic experiences.
Yeah.
Well, the other movie we're talking about is like a fucking monster, isn't it?
Blockbuster hit, yeah.
So, but imagine if like theaters were closed and they just released it straight to streaming. I don't think it'd be, it wouldn't have got that much attention.
No, definitely.
Yeah. Even though it's not a cinematic experience, you know what I mean? Like the second movie.
Yes.
This one, what we're talking about. Yeah, Super Mario Bros.
Yes. All right, we can get into our thoughts on John Wick 4. Spoiler-free still.
So, spoiler-free.
Yeah, positives and negatives. So we can start with Taran. What are your positives?
Yeah, I didn't think you would throw it to me straight away. I thought you would start off. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good in general. These movies kind of deliver on what they originally set out to do. I think they're all about... No, actually, I don't think they're all about the same. I think John Wick 1's the best one, and I think this one's the second best one. And I haven't seen the third one, so maybe the third one is better than this, but I enjoyed it. It's pretty, like, action-heavy. It's very long, but kind of has... I don't think it has that many action sequences. It has, like, three or four... But they're all extended for like 40
they're
minutes.
Long. Yeah.
Like when you and think it's over, it's not over.
It's not over. Yeah. And they, and in general, they're all pretty interesting. The thing is with the bulletproof suits, it's like a video game because everyone takes like five or six shots to die.
Yeah.
So it's like watching a video game play through essentially this movie. When I was watching it, I'm like, oh, this is like watching some guy play like Call of Duty campaign.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's one particular scene where they actually reference Hotline Miami.
Yeah.
You know, the top down.
It's like a game. Yeah.
It's literally a game.
I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
Oh, was that the scene? Yeah.
Were you asleep during that?
No, I was awake during that. It's like a top view. Yeah.
That was sick.
That was cool. That was really cool.
This movie is the closest, like, to a video game movie that is not a video game movie.
Yeah, that actually feels like a video game.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like, even the first John Wick... it was very like first person shooter type.
Yeah.
Especially this guy who just like does headshots at will.
But this one especially, because I don't know if the third one's the same, but because everyone's wearing like armor and all this bullshit. So like everyone takes like five or six shots and then everyone just gets finished off by a headshot in the end.
Yes.
But it's good to watch. Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes the stakes up because in the previous ones, it's just like, all right, it's gun fu, which is their term. They called this style of martial arts. And it's like you enter with the close range, and the moment either one like lets their guard down, they get shot in the head.
Mm.
Whereas now it's much more difficult. And yeah, just going back to John Wick 3, that is where that's introduced. And it's shown as like a concierge service given to John Wick to give him extra armor. But now in John Wick 4, the enemies aren't necessarily from other criminal factions, they're actually from the table. So, okay, they have all the resources, so they have the best armor and stuff.
Yeah, everyone, but pretty much everyone he goes up against in this movie is either, like, heavily armored or wearing the bulletproof suits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You should definitely watch John Wick 3 because like they actually, you get to see their reactions to it. Like, oh crap, one shot's not killing them. What's happening? And they actually have to adapt and modify. But yeah, it's a good watch. But yeah, John Wick 4.
You would think the extended action sequences would get boring, but for the most part, they don't. They're interesting. Yeah.
Oh, they know how to keep you engaged.
Yeah.
Like they know how to keep it new as well, because it's very easy for a martial arts film to be like, all right, they're in a tussle, they're rolling around, he does a grapple and he shoots them. Same thing. No two moves are like the exact same. There's always something different. There's two on one. There's like one guy with a sword, one dude with a shotgun, and you know,
They never cut away. It's always long shots, so you actually see what's happening.
Oh yeah, the stunt work in this is Oscar worthy.
It's very good.
Yeah. I've always thought that they should introduce an Oscar category for stunt work. And if they did it, John Wick would sweep them, because the stuff that these guys do, a lot of these stuntmen are the same guys who were working with Keanu Reeves in Matrix Reloaded, Matrix Revelations.
The two directors from the original John Wick are both stuntmen, and the guy that does this is a stuntman.
Yeah.
So,
Director.
So they used to be second unit directors for stunt work. Like David Leitch did the stunt work for Captain America Civil War.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Civil War. Yeah.
So, like, they basically do these movies as just, let's just do a whole bunch of stunts.
Yeah, and, yeah. Pretty much. And I don't know of any other movie where, like, the fan following watches the behind the scenes almost as much as they watch the movies. Because on social media, you see all these behind the work scenes of, like, Keanu Reeves in the firing range, practicing stunt driving, doing his own physical, like, stunt work with his team. And I think people watch that to appreciate the actual work that goes on in the background. Like, 10, 20 years ago, this wouldn't have been the case. You'd always have people doing, like, switching into the actor's role and doing their own martial arts. But that's what keeps this series alive. And I think with John Wick 4, getting into my feelings of how the film went, it's really weird for a series to have three films come out, which is the trifecta, right, the trilogy, and then extend that by saying there's a fourth one coming out and still have enough motivation, story, investment in the cast and crew involved to actually make a compelling story. I think they pulled it off, because there's a lot of things that were unresolved from John Wick 3, even John Wick 2, if you think about it, that weren't really addressed. I went into this movie pretty much blind. I don't watch trailers anymore because they spoil too much. And I was quite surprised. It was a really enjoyable experience. Very long, but I felt that they did the length of the movie justice. Nothing was too gratuitous. There were a couple of scenes where I was like, I had to really pay attention, and then I'm like, oh man, is that the decision they're going with, like towards the end, or is this something that they're just keeping open-ended? But yeah, overall, if you've seen any of the John Wick films, you can watch this without too much.
Yeah, I think if you enjoy the John Wick films, you'll enjoy this.
Yeah.
But
if you don't,
This is probably not for you then. This is not the one that's
If you want to jump in, well, the great thing about this series is normally when a sequel comes out, what do streaming services do? They remove all the films. Pay-per-view, put it on like HBO or some stupid service like Apple TV or Google Play, or you got to pay like $17. All the films are on Netflix still. And this is a decision by the production company. They want to keep the films up there so people can catch up. So you can watch all of them in like, a couple of days, and then get up to speed. Which is really great.
You might not even need to watch the other films to watch this. Like, it's got story and like it's got callbacks to the other ones, but you could come in completely blind and understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
If you were just, tailing on with your mates or with your girlfriend or boyfriend, you could just watch it without having too much context. But to give yourself, like, if you're a film enthusiast, I'd say definitely watch one. Two is optional, because the story is not, like, two and three are kind of closely linked. One and three before you watch four, if you really want to get up to speed. Because there are some story elements, it'd be great to know, for example, what certain things mean. Like, what is the table? What are the rules, the continental ground rules and that kind of stuff. And even just the fact that there's different institutions in different countries. Like, this is the world building, obviously. John Wick is known for, like, world building, for establishing this universe that is not visible to, everyone else. That's what I loved about the John Wick 1, 2, and 3. They constantly build the universe slowly. They start showing things like markers and the coins, and the directors use these devices to build the world up.
It's a real weird fucking world that they have. But it's interesting.
It's very interesting. And the fact that you can't, there's no no business on
fucking It's like grounds. Everyone in this world is an assassin as well. Yeah. Like, there's very little people that aren't assassins.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He's walking through that scene in Paris. End of John Wick 2 where, like, he's basically, at the end of John Wick 2, he's excommunicated.
Yeah.
And he's running through New York. And literally, like, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, homeless dude, pigeon lady, yeah. Like, skyscraper cleaner, like, he's, like, looking at the phones, messages like, oh, contract extended. Like, how do you, like, how do these guys become assassins?
Is there any people that just do normal jobs in this? Is that just like accountants?
It's like every second person's an assassin in New York. So.
In terms of other positives, I think what you mentioned in terms of the world building, this one's definitely pretty international. So they spend a lot of time in Paris, in obviously New York where it's based, but also he goes somewhere in Europe? He goes to Berlin one stage.
Berlin and then Paris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's some time spent in Osaka, I think.
Yes,
there in Japan.
Osaka. Yeah, there's Osaka as well, which we were just discussing before as well. Whenever there's any segment of a movie that's in Japan, they have to get Hiroki Sanada.
Yeah, Hiroki Sanada. He's become the poster child for like the old school Japanese representation, whether it be like mafia, samurai, or ninja. I was watching The Last Samurai yesterday. I'm like, oh, look, there's Sanada-san. And it's just like, he doesn't age. He's just got the exact same look on his face, the seriousness. But
yeah,
he was really good in this.
Yeah. He's good in everything that he's in. He was in Bullet Train as well, obviously based in Japan. He was actually in Avengers Endgame, which a lot of people forget, in that segment with Ronan.
Oh, yeah, with Ronan. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Like, can you just imagine being a casting director and be like, all right, we need a hardcore Japanese, Yakuza member or samurai. And it's like, oh, yeah, Hiroki Sanada.
Yeah.
It's done. We don't even have to, like, audition. He's done it, like, 100 million times before. So just get him. Is he on the call? Yeah, he lives down the street from me.
Yeah,
like,
just get him. Yeah. And, of course, he was in Mortal Kombat, the latest Mortal Kombat.
Yes, Mortal Kombat. Was he in Rush Hour 3? Because Rush Hour 3 had a Japanese Yakuza element.
Maybe. I can check his filmography.
I remember Jackie Chan talking in Japanese to a Yakuza member, and they were like talking about the triads versus Yakuza. I can almost bet my money on the fact that he was in there. He was in Rush
Hour. He was in 47 Ronin.
Yeah.
Let's see what else he was in. So he was in Army of the Dead, Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead. Before that, he was in Life. The 2017 movie where they go into
Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, when they go into space?
Yeah.
That's such a weird name for a movie. The borderline horror movie, isn't they? Life.
Before that, he was in The Wolverine?
Yes, The Wolverine, which is set in Japan, I think. World War II Japan.
He was in Rush Hour 3.
Yes, I knew it. I knew it.
Yeah, he is.
He's the main.
Hiroyuki Sanada.
Yeah.
Is it Mortal Kombat as well, though?
Yes. We mentioned that. Yeah.
And I think it's not bad. The fact that he brings a lot of gravitas to every performance, but he is now typecast so effectively that he knows what to bring.
Mm.
You know, whenever you need that kind of, you know, fatherly presence, that comforting presence, he's there. I like it when he's in roles that are not the antagonist, where he's actually
a
supporting character, where he doesn't. There are a couple of roles where he's antagonist. He's made for more. I'd love to hear his thoughts on being typecast as the typical, you know.
Well, it used to be that other guy who was in Christopher Nolan movies, you know, in Inception.
Oh, the Godzilla guy.
Him.
Yeah.
He was in Inception. He was in Batman Begins.
Oh, who's this?
Did the guy that says Godzilla? The Godzilla movies?
Oh, isn't that every random Asian extra?
No, but this is the guy. This is the guy that said.
Oh, Ken Watanabe.
Yeah.
Yes. Used to be him.
Yep.
But now it looks like it's.
He's the one.
No, he's always the wise world, like exposition filler, whenever there's something to do with like Japanese history or lore or something. And then you got Sanada-san, who's actually like, he's the warrior, he's the mafioso, he's the guy with the sword. Whereas Ken Watanabe is usually the wise guy. But yeah, those two are legends. It's great that, I'd love to see more of them like in roles that are outside of the stuff they normally do.
Mm. We did stay for the end credit scene, but
Is there an end credit scene?
I did look it up. It's to do with him.
Oh, okay.
It's to do with Donnie Yen's character.
I thought it was to do with the daughter.
That as well.
Yeah.
That as well.
Okay. We'll talk about that in spoilers. Any negatives? I think we mentioned the runtime.
Runtime's long. Yeah.
Yeah,
there is one sequence. I mean, I get what they were going for, but like, you know, the part where the guy's like walking in the gallery?
Yeah.
And it goes for like, feels like it goes for a very long time. You just see him walking and like walking past paintings.
Yeah,
yeah. Some kind of relevance to the paintings in the back. No, I didn't pay attention.
There must be something. I was like, this is going for a while.
Some interesting choices with camera work.
There is that scene at the end where he does all this work to get somewhere and then he has to do it all again.
Yeah.
It was funny. That was funny.
It was interesting. I felt like this movie is shot in France. A lot of it's shot in France. And I felt like there was a lot of, normally in the John Wick films, they kind of feel like the story is the primary impetus for moving things along. And then they used like the roads or the buildings or the things to get the point across that there is some obstacle to get through. But I felt like some films you could tell it feels like a little bit too touristy, where like they're actually going and seeing major sites or they're showing the sites as if like to show off the country. This one came a little bit off like, okay, it's entering into Bond territory where they're kind of purposefully kind of showing massive landmarks as opposed to showing like the everyday kind of hustle and bustle or the side pieces, which as a viewer, maybe I'm not noticing every movie does this.
Mm.
But when you have a 3-hour movie, it's like, yeah, you want to make sure you show what's necessary versus what's required. John Wick 2 did a good job of showing like a lot of underground of Italy and that kind of stuff. And they didn't do too much typical, you know, Italian landmarks. A lot of what you saw was like the underground, the night scene, that kind of stuff. And you get a feel for the people. And I feel like, yeah, this one could have definitely benefited from a little bit more, like, instead of gratuitously showing, oh, this is what, you know, Paris is like.
Mm.
Maybe just kind of hinting at the side of Paris that people don't see.
Yeah. They did the same as Osaka, actually, because they kind of highlighted the main touristy, like, where people mostly go to visit in Osaka. But, yeah, it would have been nice if they...
It's not tulips, is it? It's cherry blossoms.
Cherry blossoms.
Yeah. That's not really what Osaka... I mean, they're there in Osaka as well, but it's in Osaka, it's that there's this square, and they show it in the movie with the... it's like a biscuit company. Their logo is in the square.
Yeah.
I forgot what the biscuit is. It's with a guy running. People who've been there... It's Dotonbori is the square.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, that... people mostly visit, and the markets around that area. So they showed the market with the big lobster in the movie in one segment. But yeah,
they show a lot of stuff in Paris. They
do spend a lot of time in Paris as well. Yeah, and even Berlin. They showed a lot of the landmarks in Berlin. There's this bridge that he walks across, and that's like
that Charlie Bridge or whatever. Or
yeah,
what's it called? It's called
one of those. And then there's a cathedral as well that they show.
Oh yeah.
I think it is a departure from like what this franchise is, because it's meant to be like a grounded gangster type franchise, whereas this is going a bit more, open.
Balls to the wall.
Balls to the wall. I mean, to its credit, other than that, very few negatives. One positive I did forget to mention was this is the first time you get to see people really working alongside John.
Yes.
As opposed to just being like temporary. Like in John Wick 3, there's a nice moment where a couple of people who are hired to actually kill him have this reverent respect for him. So they don't kill him when they have the chance. They're just like, oh, come on, John, you're better than this. Give us a proper duel. And they actually get up and they fight him with respect. And as a result, John doesn't kill them. He just knocks them out as a professional courtesy in his own words. So it's like you see these small moments of relationship. John Wick 4 is the first time you actually get to see like an acquaintance is obviously an antagonist, but it starts to like see from his side as well, not just from John's perspective. So I'm kind of sensing a kind of they're trying to make it a little bit more like a buddy cop, buddy assassin type of feel.
Yeah,
which is good. It's something I've been wanting since John Wick 2.
Yeah, so definitely the first two were just like, John Wick is the boss, and he will just take down anyone.
Baba Yaga.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. John Wick take on.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the whole point.
The first one, actually, the first two, it's just like him like send 50 guys. It doesn't matter. He'll fuck them.
But yeah, that's. I don't think there's that many other negatives. It is what it is. Like, if you don't like these movies, if you didn't like John Wick 1 or 2 or 3, you're not going to.
You're not going to like this.
This is just one notch higher than those. So you're not going to like this.
Yeah. If you're not a fan of stunt work, violence, whether it be gratuitous or for a reason, probably not the film for you. And I can only think of certain couple of people in my mind who don't like violence at all.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, well, you know, try. My thing is, watch John Wick 1. And if you like John Wick 1, then you'll like this.
Yeah. I think John Wick 1 still has the biggest sort of emotional payoff. The ones after that, it's kind of stuff happens. It's more about the action than the actual emotional story that's sat behind his motivation anyway.
Yeah.
The first one definitely is still, in terms of a story.
Now that you have a dog, you can relate to this more.
Yes.
Do you have a place in your house somewhere where you like break the cement and there's like guns and shit in there? Is it in your garage?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. For that to happen, he must have had like a really interesting past.
Yeah.
that he's buried as a result of having.
Yeah.
but you have to get a sledgehammer first to open it up.
Because the background to the story is like, so John Wick's wife, she just dies.
She dies of natural causes.
Yeah, like cancer or something.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah.
And then these guys come to rob his house to get his car, and then they kill his dog.
Yeah.
And then the guy that does that, he's a crime boss's son.
Yeah.
And the crime boss is like, if you kill him, then...
knows of John Wick.
I'll kill you, yeah.
Yeah.
But he kills him, yeah.
Yeah.
That one shithead basically caused...
all of this.
500 to 600 lives as a result of like, over the course of several movies.
Yeah.
One little shithead.
I've actually got the body count... numbers across all the four movies. So,
oh, wow.
Did we have anything else in the non-spoiler section?
No, there is an end credit scene. So if you're keen to stick around.
Yeah. We should probably.
It was really late.
Yeah.
It was very late. I was tired. Yeah. You'd already gone to sleep.
Yeah. All right. I give it a cognitive recalibration. I think it's good. It's worth a watch.
Yeah.
Okay. If you like these movies, it's worth a watch.
I'll watch this again in the background. I wouldn't watch it fully paying attention, but I'll definitely watch it in the background, especially some of the action.
Yeah.
Yeah. 4.5 sharpened pencils out of 5.
There is a part
There's
with
one
the pencil.
There's one pencil. Donnie Yen.
Yeah. The pencil in this one.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Great. Okay. So, spoilers. I can start with the body count. So, how much do you think the body count was in number one?
100. It would be the least. It would be like 100 or 80 or something.
Oh, so all the deaths that you see on screen
as a result of John's.
As a result of John Wick.
Okay, I'm guessing around 50.
So it was 77.
Okay.
Number two rose to 128.
Yeah, two is ridiculous.
This one would have the most. Four would be the most.
And then three went to 94, so it went down a little bit.
Definitely triple digits in four.
And then, all right, so for four...
Is it just the ones that John Wick kills? Like, does the ones that Donnie Yen kill count?
No, okay. Just John Wick. In this one, it's 140.
140.
Jeez. Yeah. And that's just John Wick. And Donnie Yen kills, like, nearly as many.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn... Given the armor as well, that's pretty impressive.
So across all of the movies, I think it's almost 500.
Yeah, 500 lives.
439. Across the four movies.
Just wasting people.
Eh? All because, and this is a comment from Reddit, I don't know, all because one stupid Rusky killed some man's dog.
Yeah.
500 lives. That's like some Genghis Khan shit.
Anything else in terms of spoilers? So, well, we can talk about the end credits scene, which we didn't stay for, but what happens in it?
Is it spoilers?
Yeah, spoilers. Yeah, okay, so spoilers for the movie.
All right, so and we'll go straight to the end. End credits scene, essentially, Kane is... got a bouquet of flowers in front of his in that square in Italy, I think, where his daughter's playing. He's about to go and give her a bouquet, I'm guessing, and reunite with her because he has the freedom to do so. He's approaching her, and the camera goes from his perspective over the shoulder to someone else's perspective, like a hooded figure, and it's Gorgie's daughter.
Yeah,
what's her name? She's there. She's walking. She has a knife that she draws, and then the screen cuts out to black. So I'm guessing they're setting up a Kane movie.
I think there's a TV series. I think it's not Kane. I think it's the daughter.
Oh, you think it's the daughter?
I think it's going to be based off the daughter.
Okay. Yeah. A series.
I think it's a TV series because they're doing a TV series prequel about the Continental. There's a trailer out for that. So that's about Ian McShane and Lance Reddick's character making the Continental back in the when they first made it.
That's cool. Okay.
So that
I didn't know that. Is it like a proper live action series?
Yeah, yeah. There's a trailer out for that one. I know that. And then there's a second John Wick series that they're making. I don't know. I think that is what's going to be about the daughter.
That's
and
interesting.
Possibly yeah. Kane.
So and the then character the ballerina was Shimazu Akira. Her name's Akira. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
And then that'd be really the cool. Ballerina movie is.
Yeah, this has a great potential for spin-off series, to be honest. I was actually thinking that. So there's Donnie Yen's character, who's Kane, Koji's daughter, Akira, and then there's the Tracker. And the Tracker?
Mr. Nobody.
Mr. Nobody, yeah.
Dog, yeah.
It's a very interesting character. Like, yeah. That was one of the kind of grey characters in the film where it's like, I'd love to see more of this, but there's a lot of potential for spin-off in this. All the assassins, Halle Berry's character in John Wick 2, 3, John Wick 3.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. I thought she would turn up in this at some stage, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I thought Cassius would turn. Remember Cassius from John Wick 2, on where they John Wick and him are fighting. He's the bodyguard for the Italian one.
He's fucking. Doesn't he die? He's
he gets stabbed in the heart.
He's
right?
Common, yeah.
Common. Yeah, yeah. He gets stabbed in the heart, but John Wick's like, I inserted it above your aorta. If you pull it out, you'll die. Consider it a common courtesy. So it suggests that he didn't die on screen. Yeah. And if you don't die on screen in on film, you know what they say. There's always some caveat. You might still be alive.
Yeah, but. But Big Boy does die. Big Boy John Wick's dead.
Yeah, well, they allude to it. They don't show it again. Yeah. They allude to it.
That's probably one of the biggest spoilers from this movie. But so a potential fifth film was no longer on the table because John Wick dies in this movie.
Right.
But then because of the unprecedented commercial success of this movie, the president of Lionsgate said that they might still do a fifth movie.
So this is
they resurrect him.
This is what I call a studio level death. All right, studio death is where you leave it open ended. Where if you need to somehow ride around it, you can. They didn't. If they don't show John Wick getting decapitated, he's not dead.
They did show. They specifically did show the dead body. They showed the gravestone. Yeah,
they showed the gravestone. Yeah. But they didn't show the dead body, and they just show him collapsing on the steps.
Yeah,
but
from no vital like organ loss. It's just from blood loss potentially.
Yes.
Because he gets shot multiple times in the last duel where, you know, Kane and them are purposefully missing each other. Purposefully. There's no way they're just doing that out of chance.
Yeah.
So if he's losing blood, you'll black out before you die.
Yeah.
Right? And I honestly think that he's faked his death and everyone around him knows that he's still alive, but they're just giving him this chance to live another life, someone else.
It's like the Bruce Wayne Dark Knight Rises death.
Mm.
Where, like, the people he wants to know that he's alive know.
Yeah, yeah.
But everyone else doesn't.
Because his real name, and this gets revealed in John Wick 3, he has an actual real name that the Romoroska gave him when he was adopted from the orphanage.
Oh, they do say it in this, don't they?
Yeah, Giordani.
Giordani, yeah, yeah.
Brovorovic or something. That's, like, his actual name. And I think he's actually living with that name somewhere. Well, that's my theory because I feel like, okay... On one side, yeah, I think he deserves to have like peace and just not have to suffer anymore. But on the other hand, I'm like, it's really hard to kill John Wick.
I don't think they'll do another John Wick movie, but I think they'll do a Ballerina 2 if Ballerina does well, which it probably will, and John Wick will be in it. Like, he'll show up.
He'll come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like, they might do like a team. They might do Ballerina and John Wick or something.
Right. Yeah. Like, he'll come back as a last minute cameo.
Supporting character.
Maybe in like one of them. And then maybe in another one, he'll be like dual role with the Ballerina. Yeah.
I would just love it if they establish another universe. And then it's like 5 years down the track, part of the table gets corrupt. Like, I don't know, the adjudicator or something, they get corrupt. They start doing wild shit. And then they just, like, experience all of these random killings of, like, important people. It's like a curse. And in the background, it's like the Baba Yaga is, like, still alive somewhere, but they can't prove it because John Wick's dead. I'd love that if they went in that direction.
So there isn't an official spin-off centered on Kane yet, but Donnie Yen did express interest in doing it. So that's maybe what that end credit scene is about.
Interesting.
Yeah. Or maybe that
I think it would be bait. I don't think they'll do it on Kane, but like he might be like I'm thinking it's like, do you know that Hawkeye TV show where it'd be like Kane would be like Florence Pugh's character.
Oh, like following on instead of a flashback, like just following up from his character. Yeah. I could follow that.
Yeah.
Whenever you give the main character like a handicap or something that might disadvantage him, it's interesting to see how that could work.
Also, in real life, there's no way that this guy's like got any chance against anyone.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, this is not Avatar The Last Airbender, like Toph level where you get like have vibration sensing feet. So I think, yeah.
His blindness is selective at times. I'm like, how do you know where you are in anywhere at the moment? And then sometimes he's like fully blinded. He has no idea what's happening.
I love that. I love that at the like the last act of this movie. It's like, oh, you're dueling. The Marquis is like dueling with John Wick, old school tradition dueling. And he's like, oh, I want to nominate someone to take my place. I'll hire the blind man.
Yeah. Like for a duel with a gun.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to hire the guy that can't see to shoot a gun. Like, what's happening here?
Like, how fucking messed up is this dude? It's just.
I'm just saying that if I was John Wick, I would have easily defeated Kane because he's blind. Like, you just don't make any sound and you shoot him in the head. That's it.
I was gonna say, if you just stop wearing shoes and start wearing, like, hush puppies or something, he's done.
Well, there was a point where John Wick was on the ground and he wasn't sure if he had killed him. Because it's like, John, are you dead? And he doesn't say anything, but then he moves and then he hears him.
Yeah.
So technically, if you're quiet enough, you could probably get away.
I would easily kill Kane.
Out of
everyone in this movie, Kane's the easiest one to kill.
You know,
like the other guy has a dog. The dog would get you if you pin him down.
Yeah.
John Wick's got a bulletproof suit and he's like good at martial arts and everything.
Yeah.
And all the other guys are fucking huge in this movie. They're just like monsters.
Some real monsters in this. Yeah. It's... Like, obviously, it's all story building. At the same time, like, it's extremely hard, even if you can see, to get headshots. And the rate at which... I mean, look, Keanu Reeves is a great marksman, but in real life, in a combat situation, like, you think about how often people miss with Glocks from, like, 2 meters away. In real life police situations, and you think, like, oh, you could shoot headshots consecutively. It's hard. So there's an element of, like, surrealism in this. In the whole series?
Well, yeah. He gets hit by like 4 cars in this as well, and he's kind of fine.
And falls from like 5 stories and he's still fine. And
dude,
super falls weird. Down like multiple flights of stairs. Yeah,
like 8 flights of stairs. He just keeps rolling. Like, I'm like, oh, he's going to stop rolling now. But he doesn't. He just keeps going.
I reckon the stuntman rocked up to that landmark in France. I'm like, oh, we have to roll down this.
Yeah.
Give me the foam suit cover. I'll just pull.
I've been to Sacré-Cœur.
I've been to Sacré-Cœur.
Is that the stairs?
That's the cathedral's on top of the stairs. So you have to go up all these stairs to get there.
Right.
I don't think there's any other way to get there because you have to go up the stairs, I think. Yeah.
I'm surprised they allowed filming such a crazy, like, firearm heavy movie on those steps.
Yeah.
Because no, that's like, sacrilegious. Yeah. But it's good. No, it's a good scene. That's the scene you're talking about where John Wick has to fight his way up, literally video game level, his way up the tiers.
20, 25 minutes where, well, it's longer because half an hour of it is like him finding his way across France.
Yeah.
Where like at like different landmarks. And they finally get to their stairs and it's like 20 minutes of him trying to get up the stairs.
Yeah.
And then he gets to the very top and the guy kicks him all the way back down.
Just one kick.
One kick and he just keeps rolling.
Which is so I feel like he could have stopped.
He could have stopped at some stage.
Because there are parts where it's flat. Like, it's not just stairs all the way down. There's like a flat and then stairs, right?
No, but then there's the message. You know? Don't let hard knocks get you down. You have to keep going.
Pretty hilarious.
But then obviously Donnie Yen's character and the Mr. Nobody character, they switch sides at that point.
Or they want to get him up to face the duel. So
because Donnie Yen is he doesn't like the other guy.
The Marquis.
Then John Wick saves that guy's dog and he's like, yeah, I'm going to do this because I like my dog.
Yes.
I feel like they purposefully made that Marquis guy. So the Marquis is a completely different like entity of the table. They're not there in John Wick's 1, 2, or 3. It's like a new side governing body to the high table. They're like the judges or something. Right. So they introduced, I feel like they purposefully made the marquee, the Benjamin Skarsgård look, or they picked him because he looked very much like the son of the Russian mobster in John Wick 1. Like, he has that punchable face look, you know what I mean? Young, inexperienced, kind of over arrogant, all of this kind of presumed ego that he has about his position. And yeah, I think they're trying hard to channel that kind of feeling of this guy needs to die kind of feeling. And that's the one thing. You never get a satisfying, you never get that James Bond level satisfying death. It's always like a shot to the heart, shot to the head.
Yeah, it's very
execution
quick.
Style. So
yeah.
That's like,
yeah. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did like that sequence in The Duel where last moment he takes the bullet to shoot him, but then he doesn't realize that in that last round, John never fired his gun.
Never shot it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
everyone gets what they wanted, I guess, in the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everyone gets what they want.
I thought there was that funny part just before The Duel when John Wick's taking off his bulletproof jacket and the vest, and you just hear all the bullets dropping from his jacket.
Yeah, all the impacted.
It's like so many bullets.
It's ridiculous. Oh, man.
I just like how they go around like with their jacket up covering their face. Yeah.
There's still a lot of like places you can shoot.
It's such a video game like weird thing that they've thought up, but it's hilarious. It's so good. Yeah.
It actually makes me think they should actually do a proper John Wick video game. Because it would work. Yeah. Like, make it like a mix between Sifu
and
in a
that
person
game,
shooter.
Right? Keanu Reeves is in that
Cyberpunk. Yeah. Cyberpunk. That game was not good when it came out. Apparently it's better now.
Much better now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if devs, producers, if you're listening, make a John Wick game. I swear. That'd like a single player campaign style game. That'd really kill.
Mm.
Wait 1 year, release the multiplayer DLC where you can hit other people and get money. I don't know.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on John Wick? I think we've basically covered it.
It's a good time. Yeah. It's a good time. You get your money's worth. I'll tell you that. you get your money's worth. It's
long.
It is a good film. Like, I'll be honest, my favorite's still John Wick 3. The story, the world building, it's still, like, for me, John Wick 3 is the penultimate experience. John Wick 4 is a great continuation. I'm glad they made it.
I still like 1 the best, I think.
Yeah, I like 1 as well.
This is probably my second favorite.
Yeah. Nice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, to a movie that's half the length of John Wick 4, Super Mario Bros. Movie. So,
Super Mario.
Let's jump into a bit of the follow the same structure. We'll do non-spoilers, so we won't spoil anything. Although, I mean, there's not that much to spoil in this movie, but we won't spoil anything, and then we'll do spoilers after that. So, the movie's directed by Aaron Horvath and Michael Jelenic. So, they previously directed Teen Titans Go to the Movies, which apparently is pretty good.
Yeah.
It stars Chris Pratt voicing Mario, Anya Taylor-Joy voicing Peach, Charlie Day is Luigi, Jack Black is Bowser, Keegan-Michael Key is Toad, and Seth Rogen is Donkey Kong.
Seth Rogen.
The runtime is 92 minutes. Budget was $100 million. A little bit about the box office for this movie, because it's currently the highest grossing movie of this year.
Wow.
It's just ticked over 1 billion worldwide.
That's crazy.
It is one of the highest grossing movies for... So this is Illumination production. So you'd know Minions. Them from the Minions. Movies.
So is that DreamWorks?
No.
This
is Sony.
Sony. Okay.
Yep.
Universal, I think. I think it's Universal.
No, yeah, you're right. It's Universal. Sony's into Spider-Verse.
Yes.
Could you imagine Sony owning the rights to a Nintendo film?
Oh, yeah, that would be fucked with it. Yeah, jeez. That would probably just drive it into the ground. Like,
so it's and it makes sense because Universal has that Super Mario
Apparently, it's really good.
In the theme park, yeah.
In Japan, right?
In Japan.
Yeah, there's one in the US as well.
Yeah, I think they've opened the US one as well.
Nice.
They own the rights to all the Nintendo movies now. So anything they want to do as follow on from this. Interesting, the Sonic movies are owned by Paramount. So the Sega Universe movies. So
everyone's wanting to... Well, I haven't seen this movie, so... But everyone's wanting a kind of Super Smash Brothers eventuation for this.
Like a multiverse style.
Which Sonic is part of Super Smash Brothers. I don't know if he would be able to cross over.
And we'll talk about where this stands in terms of other video game adaptations. But in terms of Illumination movies, so it's already at number 5 in terms of the highest grossing Illumination movies. It's probably going to get to number 1, to be honest. So Minions in 2015 is the highest grossing Illumination production. So that made $1.1 billion worldwide. Despicable Me 3 is just made over $1 billion. Despicable Me 2 made almost $1 billion, $975 million. And then Minions Rise of Gru, last year's Minions Rise of Gru, made $939 million. So currently...
No way.
After this weekend, in which we're recording, Super Mario Brothers will be at least number 3 on this list.
That's crazy.
Likely number 2, and then probably in the next couple of weeks, it'll be number 1.
Because I remember Despicable Me movies were like, they were like crazy viral.
Yeah.
And if they hit a billion after, like just now, that is in like after many years, and Super Mario Brothers is hitting that within a month.
Yeah, that's not even a month. Moment. I think it's like, 3 weeks.
So. It's come at a good time where there's not any other animated movies out.
Yeah.
And holidays as well.
School holidays here in Australia. Yeah.
And over in the US as well.
As well?
For Easter, they would have got an Easter break,
Yeah.
Good. So it's come at a ideal time.
And people fucking love Mario.
That's right. Like, who doesn't know Mario?
Yeah.
And this movie is geared... like most of the Illumination movies, towards kids. But the key thing with this, which the Minions movies probably don't have, is that adults will go to this as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't think there's an adult
today. I hear it's not very adult-oriented, though. But, go on,
Oh, yeah, it's no Super Mario Brothers X, but, yeah. It's like, yeah.
it's not the porn parody.
It's not the porn parody. It's not the... But it's like... There's no adult today who grew up in the 90s who doesn't know the name Mario.
Mm.
You know, it's a household name. It's one of the longest running
like video game franchise, probably.
Yeah, like you might not even know Super Mario Brothers, but you know who Mario is.
Yeah,
you might not know, like the games, but you know Princess Peach. You look at it, oh yeah, that seems familiar. Like I've seen her in Mario Kart or something like that.
Everyone's played Mario Kart.
Yeah,
everyone knows Mario Kart as well. Like even my parents know what Mario Kart is.
I remember your dad was playing it and he's like, I'm already struggling. What the hell are these cows doing? So it's like it's quintessential. So it's really interesting seeing kind of society react to this film the way, like box office wise, I'm kind of surprised, but I'm also, I shouldn't be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like everyone's been waiting.
I think they had a pretty easy job. Like they just had to do it. They had to do it well enough that it doesn't ruin.
They just had to do something that looked like Mario.
It looks like Mario, firstly. Yeah. So the animation looks like the games. Yeah. But they just had to follow a very simple, basic storyline and do Mario. Just use stuff from the games. Like, just do...
So what is the storyline?
You want to go?
Yeah. So the storyline is...
Wait, can I guess it?
Yeah. Guess. Go for it. What do you think?
Bowser wants Peach.
Yeah.
And he tries to kidnap her and something about stars and they have to go find a star.
Close.
Is that
pretty
it?
Close. Yeah. But I think they moved away from the damsel in distress kidnapping.
I know that Peach doesn't get kidnapped.
Yeah.
So
but everything else is correct. So he does get the star. The opening scene is essentially he's invading the penguin kingdom.
Oh, it's in the trailer.
To get their star. And then he uses that to launch an offensive against all the other kingdoms.
Against the Mushroom Kingdom.
And I think his goal is to get Peach, but he doesn't start off with kidnapping Peach. Because if you get Peach, it's like, why are you still around, bro?
So is the objective for Mario and Peach to get the star off Bowser?
Well, it's actually to save Luigi, because Luigi gets sucked into Bowser's dimension or kingdom or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So actually the way the movie starts is that it's not set in Mushroom Kingdom. It's set in Brooklyn. Mario and Luigi are actual plumbers and they live in an Italian family household with a joint family, like, you know, all the way from like the father down to the nonnas, down to the uncles and aunties and stuff, which is a really, really interesting choice. And they, like, I don't know if you guys ever watched SpongeBob SquarePants, but when you see SpongeBob, it's like you don't know if he's middle-aged, if he's like a 30-year-old single guy living in his house, or if he's like a teenager.
Mm.
And that ambiguity is like the exact same energy they bring to Mario. They want people to relate to him, but he has a mom, he has a dad, he has a nonna, and he's like in his room playing video games at times, but he's trying to make it as a plumber. So there's this kind of focus in a real-world Brooklyn-style sense where, yeah, they're actually plumbers, and that's the way they kind of get their name out. They make this TV advert. The Super Mario Brothers is meant to be the plumbing crew. And there's all, by the way, the whole, everything in this film is like a reference to something that happened in the past. So like the first appearance of Mario and Luigi as on a video game was in Wrecking. I think it was the one where Donkey Kong's
throwing barrels. It's the Donkey Kong one.
Donkey Kong one. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then after that,
I think in that he's called Jumpman or something.
Yeah, he is called Jumpman. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
And there's a character called Jumpman in this who's like referencing that, like he's referencing like Mario's ex-employer. Like
it's that Super Smash Bros. Level. You guys remember that? Like Donkey Kong's at the top and the barrels keep rolling down.
Yeah, that was that one. And then after Jumpman, there was another one where it's like you're literally just navigating. There's another stage where it's just like pipes and the turtles coming along and the brothers have to keep going along and go up. So it's like after that, Super Mario Brothers came out. So there's references to their history, but it's set in a real world Brooklyn and like an animated Brooklyn. And then they get sucked into this through circumstance, and they get sucked into the Mushroom Kingdom from a warp hole or something. And that's where the story kind of takes you from a grounded sense of, oh, these aren't the Mario Brothers we know. They're like actual people who are trying to make it as plumbers. And now they're like trying to reunite and rescue each other in these fantastic kingdoms. So the story is like, so they become, they're plumbers who become heroes in order to save the environment that they're in. And on their path, they meet Princess Peach, who's like treated like the leader of the people. She's not like, oh, yeah, she's not completely helpless in this. She's competent.
Yeah.
So Bowser captures Luigi and then Peach and Mario go to save Luigi.
Well, Bowser's going to invade the Mushroom Kingdom anyway to get Peach. So Peach was always going to try to go there.
Yeah. So Mario.
And then Mario ends up going there because he wants to save Luigi.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They both get pulled into this alternate realm. Luigi just ends up through his sheer bad luck
in
a dark realm, and Mario ends up in the Mushroom Kingdom. The story progresses and there's different like elements here, but as like 90s kids, I'm looking at this going like, I honestly had a great time because I didn't expect there to be any film ever to be made like this. I'm just looking for like references and cameos 24/7. I was just looking at that the whole time. I'm like, oh, that's a reference to Luigi's Mansion. Like the first place Luigi ends up in is a dark, dank world with like skeletons, and he just runs into a mansion
with dry bones and stuff.
Yeah,
and
I'm like, he's got a torch and he's looking around a mansion. I'm like, this is a Luigi's Mansion reference. This is like for and all the
Mario Kart.
There's a Mario Kart segment.
Oh, it's a Mario Kart segment.
There's probably a kind of a reference to Smash Bros. When DK is first.
Oh, introduced. Yeah, because they go. It's on that bridge, and then then DK
essentially challenges him to a fight.
Yeah,
and the whole Donkey Kong family is like straight referenced out of DK 64, Donkey Kong 64.
Mm.
So Cranky Kong. Funky Kong is the guy who picks up the brothers. I'm pretty sure it's Funky Kong.
Yeah, Funky Kong's,
and he's driving a car with a rhino on it, which is a Donkey Kong Country reference.
And there's Diddy Kong.
Yeah, Diddy Kong in the audience.
Yeah. I think there's even a slight, because this Diddy Kong racing game, it was always like a parallel to like Mario Kart.
Yeah.
So there's a segment when they go to the Donkey Kong, when they go to meet Donkey Kong, where they also race. Well, they're in a cart.
Yeah, everyone's in carts just to travel around the place, and that's where the cart comes, like the Donkey Kong land kingdom all just moved by carts.
Yeah.
Special mention, when Donkey Kong's introduced, they played the Donkey Kong rap from DK64, and I was like, that's the last thing I was expecting.
Seth Rogen wanted that. Like he said that they should do that.
They should do
that. That was his one thing that they had to do.
Yeah. Kudos to Grant Kirkhope for composing that. He wasn't credited in the credits for it, but when he found out on Twitter that it was in there, he lost his mind. He was like, oh my God, this is the worst rap I've ever made. I can't believe it made it to the film. Now it's in the official soundtrack.
Yeah, and I think the music cues, like just references in general, like you mentioned, there's a lot of references just here and there, but oh, even the musical or like sounds, like when they go into pipes, there's that sound that they do that every time. And then
and it's not like lifted from the games, it's like an adaptation of how it might be in the real world. Interesting work. And when you're going to Princess Peach's castle, like the Nintendo Mario 64 theme of like the first thing you enter in the nice like waltzing movements, that's the same. Mario's ringtone was the GameCube startup turn. There's so many nice little references for like the older fans of the series and Nintendo fans in general. But that whole thing about keeping a movie for kids, making a movie for kids while still catering for the older crowds, that's an art. That's something that this film did well. There's some jokes in this that like only like that little star bit that's jailed. And is like, oh, it's hilarious. I'm not going to spoil it for you because you might enjoy that. Yeah. But it's just like, yeah, there's parts in it that grown-ups will be like, okay, yeah, I remember this. Or this is funny to me.
The animation is... So the only thing I'd say about Illumination animation, it tends to be pretty basic.
It's not Sony.
It's not Sony or like Pixar or Disney. Like, it doesn't have the like detail that those movies tend to have in terms of the animation. Like, an example is like in Monsters, Inc., Sully's fur, you can see like each bit of hair in his fur. You don't see that level of detail in like Minions. But for what they needed to do for this movie, it looks like the games. Like, it looks like Mario from the games.
Well, it looks like Mario Kart. Like, I remember Mario Kart on the Wii U was the first one where I was like, okay, this looks like an animation. That's where the graphics are starting to meld with the film. And there were moments here and there where I could tell, okay, they showed a bit of Mario's texture on his overalls. Like, you could tell it was like jeans, like it was denim. But they didn't go further than that. And this is where you get that feeling. I don't know if you guys remember when we went from Smash Brothers Melee to Smash Brothers Brawl. There was that trailer where, like, they just transitioned from the shiny graphics of the GameCube to, like, the detailed textures of the Wii or something. And some people were like, if you make it too realistic, it starts to then lose...
Like the Disney live action remakes. It loses something.
Like Lion King's a perfect example, right? When you start to abstract away from the animation and it gets too realistic, you kind of pull back. You don't accept that.
You lose a lot.
So it's like if they started making the pipes like metallic and rusty and like actual like manhole covers, you'd start to be like, oh, I don't buy this. But when you make it shiny, plasticky and fantastical enough and it's got that toy element, then you start to actually commercialize it in your mind and you go, okay, this is something I can play with in my mind. This is something I can actually like. If this was a side scrolling, there was a scene with like a side scroller in Brooklyn. And I'm like, I would love to play this as a game. There's like a little scene where they're both like running up ladders.
So this is before they go to the Mushroom Kingdom.
This is just, and they're dodging real life things like dogs and cats and I think there's a banana on the floor or something.
I think there's a banana. And Luigi, of course, he's the one that slips on it, but he's like lagging behind. But Mario's like getting ahead, and it was a good. It was like the Super Mario games that we played in the past, where you can also have two players at once. So it was,
I hear there's a perfect replica of the first Super Mario Brothers level in this as well.
In that you actually see it happening. So Mario's in his room playing the NES, right?
No. Like Mario's doing it.
Oh, Mario's doing it. Yeah.
Is that with Peach when he goes?
I think it's either in the training level.
The training montage.
There's I've seen in the trailer. It's like the part where he's like he's in the sky. I think.
And he's running through. Peach.
Peach. So Peach actually, when Mario comes in, Peach is like she's like the leader of the Toad people. She's like leading. She's basically trying to muster forces and lead a counteroffensive. Mario comes along and is like, oh, maybe I can help. And Peach is like, ah. Okay, but first you have to show me what you're made of. And Peach runs Mario through this obstacle course, and she guns it. She runs through this thing, and she's been practicing it for like her whole life. But she's naturally gifted in these things, and she did it. And it's like it kind of pulls you back, like, oh wow, I didn't know Peach could do proper platforming.
Is Daisy like, in this?
No, not in this.
So we can get to the characters that are not in this and are likely to be introduced later. One thing about Peach also is I think it's Super Mario Brothers 2 where you can play as her.
You have to beat the whole game and then you can play as her, I think.
I'm pretty sure, was it Super Mario World? Super Mario World or Super Mario Brothers 2 where you actually start off, you're playing as four characters, like you basically all four, Mario, Luigi, Peach and Toad are kind of playable, and you can choose who to actually lead the group.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it's like platforming. But you're right. Yeah. There was one where Peach was made playable pretty early on.
And apparently a lot of people used to play with Peach just because she had that jump where she can just float.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. That's in Smash Bros. as well.
Yeah.
Peach used to... I used to play a lot as Peach in Smash Bros. I always use Daisy in Mario Kart.
In Mario Kart.
But also Peach had her own game on the DS. It was called Super Princess Peach.
And
And she was the main kind of thing. It was like... Miyamoto always said that he always envisioned Peach as being as acrobatic as anyone else. But like the fact that she represented that typical, the dress-wearing princess, people maybe didn't see her as, that's not what you're made to kind of jump around and platform or you want to ground pound or something. So, yeah, anyone questioning whether or not this is normal, that's exactly what the creators had in mind for her the whole time. So it was great to see that they didn't do the easy choice would have been to make a damsel in distress movie like Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah.
Right? Or Super Mario Odyssey, where Princess Peach is in need of rescuing or something and Mario has to do some stuff to get to her, which is great and you're playing a game. But I think that this worked a bit better because you get to see how... I think the reason why they went with Chris Pratt and Anya Taylor-Joy again is that when you're looking at the faces of Peach and Mario, they're not lifted directly from the game's model. They look a little bit more anthropomorphized, like the features are a little bit more relatable. And the accents as well, it's not Charles Martinet doing the voice.
Yeah.
Right? Charles Martinet did have some nice
cameo.
Yeah. So he played Mario's dad. And he also played a different character, like an actual plumber who was the stereotypically Mario voice.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And he's like a fan of, he's like playing a game or something in the... In the pizza parlor that they go to?
He's playing a game. But he's a supporter of the brothers.
Yes. Yeah,
like saying, you're doing great and stuff. But they made his, like Mario's voice, like an actual Brooklyn Italian voice with a slight accent, not too heavy. And I think that works because it's like, that's the original inspiration for Mario, was that Miyamoto was staying in America and one of the landlords, his name was Mario, and he just observed all this stuff about, the people coming, the plumbers were usually migrants. So it's like, it's close to the story. But it also, you get used to it real quick. You're not wondering, like, why isn't this Mario got this stereotypically Italian accent? No, you're not thinking that.
Yeah. And he doesn't really talk that much in the games anyway. So he just has a couple of catchphrases.
Yeah. Oh, he barely talks. Yeah.
In Mario 64, he doesn't talk at all. There's no talking in that game.
Yeah. There's no talking. He doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
Like when he's jumping, he's like, so long, game bowls. Like,
yeah. But it's mostly just like speech bubbles.
Yeah. By the way, he never said so long, gay Bowser. He just said so long, Bowser. People on the internet go nuts over this. Like, they think he's like, so long, gay Bowser.
Is Toad's in this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, there's the Toad.
Yeah.
There's like a main Toad, but then
there's the, like other Toads. Yeah, Toadette.
Toadette.
I did see one Toadette.
Okay. Yeah.
In the background.
Yeah. No, like no dialogue, but yeah.
Baby Bowser.
I think there was a reference.
Was that playing in the? There was like a rock band. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, Bowser Jr. You mean
Bowser?
Bowser Jr.
There were Bowser Jr.'s there. I didn't see Baby Bowser.
Baby Bowser's a person as well, isn't it?
Or is it just Bowser when Jr.? He's a baby?
Yeah, no, Baby Bowser's the main villain when you're playing Yoshi's Island.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Mario's a baby, but Bowser's a baby. Yeah.
There is Baby Mario and Baby Luigi in one small segment.
Yeah, small flashback. Okay. Small flashback.
There's also Baby Peach, actually, in one small segment.
Yes. There's Baby
Peach. Is there Boo?
Yes, in
the wedding?
In the wedding, yeah. He turns... Yep.
It's King Boo as well.
King Boo,
Oh, King Boo, King with the crown. Yeah,
King Boo.
Yeah.
King Bom-Om is there.
Yeah.
That's funny. I was laughing.
Koopa Troopa.
Yeah, there's loads of Koopa Troopas. Different variants. There's the red shell, the flying ones, the flying blue shell. There's a really cool spiny shell moment where it's like...
Right. First bomb?
First bomb. Yeah. That's a really cool moment there. They brought in all the, like, as many different elements of the villains.
Lots of lore.
There's no Bowser Jr. as a character, like as an actual person who comes on the screen and is like, Dad, what's going on? Because there's 10 kids, right? So it's like, they didn't bring... There were Shy Guys from Yoshi's Island.
Shy Guys.
And they make the sound that they make.
Is that
what
it is?
they make like, any sounds? Oh, it's like mute sounds. It's like
it's like,
they make like a sound. They don't talk, obviously. So
There's a sighting of like a herd of Yoshis as Mario and Peach.
So I know the end credit scene is a Yoshi egg cracking.
Yes. So it's probably hinting at the next one.
Yeah, but there is Yoshis in
the
movie.
The Yoshi egg is in Brooklyn.
It's in Brooklyn.
It's in the sewers of Brooklyn.
Okay, right. But there is.
There's actually
Yoshi's already in the movie, so must be the Yoshi. That's crack.
Yeah. You just see them in the back. Like, they don't play an important role in this movie, but so next movie, I guess they'll bring in Yoshi. Other characters that are not in this movie, obviously we've just been, like, spoiling this, but you've probably seen it by now.
Yeah. It's not a story heavy. Like, you're not going to spoil it if I tell you that. Yeah, Peach does not get with Bowser.
That would be a twist if that was,
I'm sure there's a universe where there is.
So Waluigi, Wario.
Oh, they're not in it?
They're not in it. Yeah. But I could see how they would probably end up being in it. They're probably like cousins of Mario
that,
in
that
real
is
world.
What they are. They're cousins. Yeah.
They're cousins. They could totally work. They're such an amazing duo. Like, And to be honest, I'd love to see more of Bowser. Jack Black killed it as Bowser. He was so good.
The voice cast, Chris Pratt was fine, but in terms of standout, I would say Jack Black was actually really good.
Yeah.
And Seth Rogen was actually pretty good as well.
Yeah, so Seth Rogen was
Seth
just
Rogen's
Seth Rogen.
Voice suits Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't act a bit. Like, even Seth Rogen's laugh, they animated Donkey Kong's laughing around Seth Rogen's laugh, so he's just like, like Donkey Kong just laughing. I'm like, that's the Seth Rogen bit, bro. That's not even Donkey Kong there.
Yeah, and Jack Black gets a chance to even sing as Bowser in this. So
Peaches.
That song is very viral, and it's stuck in my head.
Oh my God. Apparently, it's worthy of, like, it's technically going to be submitted into the original song.
Yeah.
So it might be Academy Award nominated.
You know, I don't know if you know about this, but about Jack Black, he writes a song for every movie he's in.
Yes, I heard about
it. It's not like the song doesn't have to be in the movie. He just himself writes a song for every single movie he's in.
Yeah. I think he sang one for Jumanji.
Dude,
Jack Black is so talented. I would actually love to hear like an album of his last few, like 10 movies, the stuff he's done. Yeah.
So the Peaches one was the one he wrote for this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they actually put it in the movie.
Yeah.
Anything else?
There's a lot of there's a crap ton of Easter eggs.
Yes,
so
he plays Kid Icarus in his bedroom.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we could see Pit.
Yep, we could see Pit. There's an Arwing statue from Lilac Wars or Star Fox 64. If you're
on his TV, yeah,
on his TV,
yeah.
So do you think that there's a potential for like a Super Smash Bros thing? Like if they like do a multiversal?
Even before they do that, I would love to see like this is
just
going
separate
into
movies.
Like, Nintendo movies. Because Nintendo, the first thing you see when you see this movie is like Nintendo is now a publishing entity that can make movies. So it opens the floor to like a lot of possibilities. There's a slight small references to like the other niche franchises like F-Zero or Metroid. There's like in the news ticker, there's like small references like saying LV-2246 was listed as being exterminated or something.
Yeah.
Which is like...
Was there an Earthbound reference somewhere?
Oh, I was looking for an Earthbound reference.
I think there was, but I can't remember.
Sesh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. It would have been in the form of like a yo-yo or a bat, I think. But there was also in the Donkey Kong, like the Mario Kart arena, there's like an awesome scene where like each of the characters gets to pick out their carts. And it's just like in Mario Kart,
you get to pick out your parts and pieces.
And Mario's
a different, you know how you can have like the different tires and the different. Yeah, it was that.
The red, if anyone's listening who wants to play Mario Kart, the best build is you choose a medium sized character, so like a Daisy or a Peach or something like that. And then you go the teddy cart.
The teddy cart, yeah.
Yeah. So it's got a teddy bear on the front.
And the smallest
And then you go the red rollers.
Yeah.
Yep, so there's the red rollers. They're like one of the smallest wheels.
Oh, really?
Yep, and then the thing doesn't really matter. What's it called? The
The
parachute or parasol, whatever.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter that much. Yeah. But the teddy cart, the rollers, and the medium-sized character.
Okay.
You win every time.
That's
Well, you've got to be good as well. But
I usually go the lighter character with the because they have their equivalent of a teddy. Or they have a teddy cart.
Or they just have a teddy cart.
Yeah. I usually go the lighter character. The heavy ones, I don't
I went heavy when I played the Wii one, but in the newest one, the medium characters.
So well, guys, the Wii one, it was just you just go bikes.
Bikes.
Bikes. I think you guys are selecting for like performance and speed. I'm full aesthetics. Whatever looks good.
No, you got to come first. You got to come first. I would be.
What's the point? That's what the spinal shell is for.
Well, there is that Mercedes cart in the
But
it's not that great.
My favorite's the one that looks a bit like the F1 hot rod racer.
Oh yeah, there is that one.
It's just quintessential Luigi dead state. You know, it's just like that's my favorite one.
There's always the standard cart, like from the original Mario Kart 64.
Well, that's what in the movie, like Mario chooses the standard.
Yeah,
he chooses the standard.
He goes the standard.
Peach chooses a motorcycle. Yeah. The funniest part is like you just see them coming in. Toad's got this like monster truck with massive wheels, and I remember the audience when watching it, they lost it.
Yeah,
they found that hilarious, and I was just like, "Yeah, that's good."
And DK's got a similar cart as well, right? He's got a bigger.
Oh, he's got like rocket power.
Yeah, he's got like
monster truck jeep, which is really interesting. Yeah. I've seen so many side spin-offs of different kind of races, like arcade races from like SpongeBob Universe or Sonic or Crash Bandicoot. No one does it as good as Mario. The closest is
the Crash Bandicoot racer, which is decent, but Mario Kart's so much better.
Can tell they're all trying to replicate the formula. Yeah. The original is always going to be the best.
Yeah, yeah.
Mario Kart's still good. Mario Kart 8 is still amazing if you play it.
Yeah.
I thought they'd fit in a battle Mario Kart sequence rather than race Mario Kart sequence.
With the balloons.
Yeah. to be honest, Battle has never been as good as it was in N64. Like, 64 after that, it's very much died off.
Well, they made the levels too big. That was a problem.
But I think it's just our generation that has that fondness with the battles in Mario Kart. I don't think any other generation really does.
No, I remember playing where, like, when you're playing split screen as well, they had to cut the frame rate by half so that each person gets 15 frames.
One of that levels is fucking off the chain. You go so fast.
Yeah, that's why it just skips So it's just hilarious. Going like 15 to like 5 frames a second and you're just going fast.
It's ridiculous.
And you know how there was like a hole in the middle of that level and you could get over it if you had like a star or a boost?
Yeah.
That's
those are good times.
No, Battle is very fun only in N64 and none of the other ones.
It just fell off.
Yeah.
But like the fact that they focus so much on Mario Kart just shows how many people are playing Mario Kart versus the traditional Mario platformers.
Yeah.
I think the traditional Mario experience is a niche experience, whereas the Mario Kart's...
Everyone plays Mario Kart.
You play it with your parents, you play it with your girlfriend, your wife, your kids, whatever.
Everyone. Yeah. Everyone just chuck a game on and you drift.
Yeah.
And you spine chuck.
Yeah, literally anyone could play Mario. I think like in terms of steep learning curve, it'd be like Mario Kart's probably easiest. You can just come in and play it.
Yeah.
And then maybe like the Super Mario games, because the side scroller ones, because they're kind of easy to get onto. And then the ones after that. I think Super Smash Bros. Is a little bit more niche. Like, you got to learn it a bit.
You can just sit there and just keep pressing A in Button. Super Smash Bros.
Yeah. I think a lot of people struggle with the recovery.
The recovery, yeah.
With Super Smash Bros.
Yeah. And Super Smash Bros. Is probably probably the most niche group, if you think about the crowd that plays it competitively. We're
without items and everything as well, like the actual tournament.
The competitive Smash Bros. Scene is, like, I remember when they announced Smash Brothers for the Wii U, they had a massive tournament, like, and they broadcast it, and it was when they announced Mega Man. It was insane. It was like proper stadium level, like, crowds, and they were getting at it. But again, mass appeal is going to stay with Mario Kart and the mobile phone games as well, like the easy to approach stuff. Yeah. So as a commercial enterprise, this is it's a commentary on what's worked. And also what probably they're going to invest in.
Yeah. It's interesting they went straight to Rainbow Road as well, which is the final level.
Rainbow Road is the most, like, noticeable Mario Kart level. Like, if you ask anyone, name a Mario Kart level, they'll say Rainbow Road as the first one. They might name something else afterwards, but the first one they'll name is Rainbow Road.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Although they did mention, is it Delfino Plaza, Delfino Square
from Mario Sunshine?
I think it's in Wii.
But that level, Delfino Plaza is in Mario Kart Wii.
Yeah,
and it's referencing Super Mario Sunshine.
Yes.
Yeah,
Delfino I think Square. They do reference that in this, because when Mario's going up to Peach's castle, he goes through certain areas, and I think one of them is Delfino.
Oh, it's like a beachy paradise-y kind of place.
Yeah.
Nice. Like, it's a good time. Like, you could go in there and just maybe have played one or two games, you'll probably find a reference or two.
Yeah.
Like, definitely. I haven't played Super Mario Odyssey yet, but I could see there's tons of references to Super Mario Odyssey. Like, there's a desert level where they're going through, and it's just like, that's straight out of Super Mario Odyssey. The whole fact that Bowser's wearing, like, white wedding garb was from Super Mario Odyssey, the last act of it. It's like Mario and Bowser are both wearing, like, their wedding attire.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to marry Peach, and Peach is like, I don't want to marry anyone. And that's the end of the, that's the end of the game. Sorry, spoiler alert. But, yeah, it's interesting to see how they went with.
I haven't played a straight Mario game since Super Mario Galaxy, so.
All right, yeah, you should try the LGBTQ ones. They're really nice.
LGBTQ.
Because you said you haven't played a straight Mario. Right.
Yeah. I was like, what did you say?
Where Mario's going after Birdo.
Birdo, that's one character we didn't see.
Who?
Yeah.
Birdo. Birdo. Yeah, we didn't see.
Well, if you don't see Yoshi, you can't just throw Birdo in the mix.
Look, what is Birdo? Like, is it a Yoshi?
I'm pretty sure he's trans.
Yeah, like, which game, like, is he?
No, I'm not even joking.
What is the character?
I'm not even joking. I'm pretty sure Miyamoto said they wanted to introduce someone who is, like, intersex. But no, he's like, he's not a Yoshi. He can, like, inhale from his nose. But
so it's like a Kirby.
Kind of. It's weird. Yeah. It's like his first appearance was in one of the 2D Sky side-scrolling games. So I'm not sure exactly what species he is.
No Kirby in this?
No.
No.
Well, Kirby's technically a separate game, right? There's no
Kirby's
but so it's like Star Fox and like
those are like references like in the
actually I think Kirby's gonna be, if there's anyone gonna make a in-universe appearance, it'll be Kirby, because they're really close to the whole universe of the central story.
Kirby doesn't talk as well, right?
Nah, Kirby doesn't talk, but there's other characters in the Kirby
Meta
universe,
Knight,
like,
talks. I think
Meta Knight talks, King Dedede talks.
Yeah. Mm.
They could really do a nice series with them.
Was Rosalina in this?
No,
but she's hinted at, because one of the star bits,
the star,
they're in the game. And Peach's backstory in this is very similar to the... Do you remember in Super Mario Galaxy when you find pages and it goes into the story of a young girl who landed on a starry world? I felt that was referencing Rosalina's story. So Rosalina will most definitely make an appearance eventually.
Yeah.
But again, that's like, what is the purpose of introducing all these characters? It would be to either expand and show their own stories, or to have them all in one big kind of Super Smash Brothers style, like, team up or something.
Yeah. And so, they do mention that Peach might be from the, like, same world as Mario, because she's human.
Right, yeah.
So, potentially Daisy's, like...
Daisy's just her sister.
In the real world, yeah.
In the real world, yeah.
In the real world, yeah. And another thing I forgot to mention, when you're going through the castle in the Mushroom Kingdom, Princess Peach's castle, you see, like, portraits of different worlds all around the place, like Mario
64. Oh, like in 64.
Yeah. Where you jump in. Like, it wasn't the same portraits, but there were other portraits of different worlds. So, yeah, so many little, like, nice nods. Nice nods to different universes. I would personally love to see Nintendo do another film. Maybe not as... Not for the same market.
Yeah.
Me, personally, like, I would kill for a good Metroid film.
Yeah.
Because Metroid itself was inspired from Alien. From Ellen Ripley's character. And it's like, well, if they do a Metroid film, that's just a full circle movement. Yeah. And it comes back to, like, we don't have many space horrors in film anymore. It's been a while since we had one. And this would be a really nice way to kind of show that.
Well, I think a really good decision with this movie was making animated.
You mean the live action one?
I think if they're going to do a joint universe, I should just keep everything animated.
Animation, I think live action in Nintendo, you could only do it for
certain point. Like, I could see the
Zelda,
but I think they should do it. If they're going to do Zelda, just keep it animated as well.
I would like it like that.
Yeah, Studio Ghibli. We have a nice poster here in the room of a Ghibli-inspired Zelda.
So, like, a hand-drawn style animation
would
look really good. But
look amazing.
Yeah, it looks like they've gone down the Illumination route, so they're probably just going to use them for all of the movies now.
Yeah.
I would be keen to see a Super Smash Bros. Movie with the hand as the villain.
Oh, yeah. Hand. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
They created all sorts of villains for the campaigns in the Super Smash Bros. Movies, so it's interesting to see what they could come up with here.
They could do, like, the hand as the villain, and then all the side characters get turned into trophies, and then they have to go rescue them.
Yeah.
Which is the storyline in Brawl.
The subspace emissary.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That's right.
Where Rob, I think Rob was the main villain, right?
No, the hand was the villain.
The hand was the villain in the end? No, wasn't it Taboo?
No, yeah, it was Taboo. The hand's the villain in 64?
Yeah. The original classical one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a
and rip. Kirby's like the, is it in Brawl where Kirby's the main character? Like you start off with Kirby and yeah, then yeah. he has to find the rest of them.
Then, yeah.
He wakes up first.
Yeah.
Really interesting choice they went with there.
Yeah.
I would love to see a Lilat Wars film because it's like animation slash animals. You could make it like really interesting and it has a lot of appeal for both you know, grown-ups and kids.
Yeah.
So Lilat Wars borrowed heavily from like Star Wars, from like all the space battles and stuff are basically Star Wars. There's one level where that's just Independence Day, where the mothership comes down and keeps releasing waves of enemies and you got to kill them before it just destroys the home base. So yeah, they could do a lot with Star Fox. They could do a lot with Earthbound would be really good with Illumination Studios because you're going back to like 1960s, 1950s, you know, rural towns. With kids playing with yo-yos and baseball bats and they come across aliens and stuff.
Animal Crossing could be a very peaceful movie.
Yeah. Yeah, do you think there's enough like of a fan base for Animal Crossing?
I played a bit of Animal Crossing.
I think, yeah. Well, during COVID, that
it was a lot of the most popular games.
Yeah, went crazy during COVID.
Yeah.
I know, it's a... The story would be very basic. there's not really a story in the game itself.
I can't imagine. Come to my island and let's do stuff.
It's basically just... Yeah. I don't know, it could be like a farming movie, like a fishing movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to see F-Zero.
Oh, yeah.
F-Zero, racing F-Zero. Yeah.
Captain Falcon.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Yeah. And who's the, is it?
The guy that looks like a lizard.
The turtle?
Yeah. The guy we used at Pico?
Yeah, Pico.
Yeah. He's the one that looks like a lizard, yeah?
Yeah, I think it was some sort of alien. Yeah.
The only reason why we picked him is because when you pick him, he has this little animation where he shouts.
That would be good.
Yeah, F-Zero would be good. There was also, we mentioned Zelda. Pokemon's been done in its own sense, so that's like...
Yeah, separate. I don't think you need to do a Pokemon.
And I think Pokemon's owned by a separate studio.
Yeah.
Because they did Detective Pikachu, and that was Warner Brothers, I think.
Yeah, it would be similar to, like, the Sonic situation. Like, you would be able to do Sonic in this. Yeah.
Ooh, Fire Emblem.
Fire Emblem.
Yeah, Fire Emblem would make an amazing story, but you can't do what's happening now with Awakening and stuff. It's a bit too convoluted. You might have to go back to the original formula, go back to the original Fire Emblem on Game Boy Advance.
Yeah. Cool. We'll quickly talk about where this sits in terms of video game adaptation movies, because we've had quite a few, and this could be the this could be the new trend, because we're starting to see superhero movies kind of not being as popular as they used to be, especially in terms of critical reception and also box office. But in the last couple of years, we've had a bunch of video game film adaptations. So, Detective Pikachu being one, Mortal Kombat, Tomb Raider, Warcraft, Sonic the Hedgehog, because they've already done two of those. Assassin's Creed was a little while back. Anything else recent?
Uncharted
recently. There's Last of Us, the show.
TV show, yep.
Yeah, so where do you think this sits with respect to those?
Some of those are very bad.
Yeah. Well, most of them tend to be bad video game movies, but I would put this at least top three. I think the Sonic movies are pretty good. The Sonic 1 and 2 were pretty decent movies.
Both of them are pretty good.
Yeah.
One's better.
Yeah, I think one was really good. This is, up there with those. The only thing I'd say about this is it's very simple. They stuck to a simple storyline. They executed it well. Like we said, like the adult viewers will get attracted because of nostalgia. The younger viewers will like it just because it's basically catered to them. But I'd like to see them take it a bit further in the next. They're definitely going to make more movies now since this is so successful. So.
Yeah. Anything with stakes would be great.
Yeah.
This one, I think purposefully, they made the stakes very lightweight just so you didn't have to be emotionally worried about, what if something bad happened?
Yeah.
Whereas you could start approaching that later on, and that'd be perfectly fine. I was going to say the Sonic movies. There was also, there were some Resident Evil movies.
Yes, there was.
The live action ones were questionable, but there's some CGI Resident Evil movies, which were really kind of in-depth and good, but they don't have the notoriety of Mario, Sonic,
There's a Monster Hunter movie, which was apparently very bad.
Very bad.
Monster Hunter. Oh, gosh.
It's actually surprising that it took them so long to do a Mario movie, because Mario's
Well,
like,
they did, and it sucked, yeah, so that's I why guess, they did do one yeah, for a while.
I guess that one probably scarred them, the one that came out like 30 years ago.
Well, Japan was never going to do it, because you just imagine Mario going around, and it's like, unless it's CGI, it's not going to work. So you needed the right studio. You needed the right acting talent as well. And I think it wouldn't have happened if they didn't make the choice to kind of slightly water down the Mario-ness of Mario. Like, instead of making him a full-on, like, Charles Martinet level, wahoo, like, bring him down a bit, make him more relatable, and then ham it up for, like, the moments that count.
Yeah.
That decision, if they didn't do that, it probably wouldn't have been as accepted. Because you got to remember, who's the one watching these films? Mostly Americans. Mostly, you know, people from the United Kingdom and Australia, and they want it to be appeal to everyone, but I think if you don't hit the core crowd, it's not going to take off. So you can't appeal to everyone if you have a heavy, thick accent or Italian accent where people can't understand half of the words you're saying.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's got charm where they actually referenced the family, the characters, and the different aspects of it. Next, I'd love to see more, like, push the boundaries and take it further, because now there's no risk. They have the base, they've established the film.
Apparently, after that first movie, so Nintendo gave like a lot of creative license for that first movie when they made it, and then they made it, and then they showed it to Nintendo, and they were like, "What the fuck is this?
Right.
What the fuck have you just made?"
Did they really?
and then they had to release it because they put all this money into it. But then from that point onwards, Nintendo held their like their assets so close, they didn't want any other people to control it.
You're talking about the 90s Mario movie, right?
Yeah.
Live action one, the horrendous.
So from that point onwards, they didn't want anyone to, like, they wanted to hold their assets and didn't want anyone to control it.
Yeah.
So they finally loosened the chain a little bit to let someone do it. And since this is kind of more true to form, I think they'll loosen it a little bit more. And as long as they don't make a fucking whatever that movie was, like a dinosaur interdimensional movie.
That was also the 90s of like using costume props for a lot of stuff.
Like, they weren't quite there yet with the CGI. And
but that movie isn't a Mario movie in itself. Like, none of the things is Mario. Other than the character being called Mario.
That was like a Christopher Nolan take on like a real life universe that inspired the games. Kind of style take.
Yeah. It was like, but it wasn't good.
Yeah, it wasn't good. This is different. Yeah.
Cool. So, it's up there with the best video game adaptations.
I think it's setting a new benchmark for like, okay, this, if you want it to do well and be received well, A, follow the rules, don't take itself too seriously, and B, it's like create a platform to bounce off. At the same time, keep the fans engaged. Like, there was some musical cues in there that like are straight from the games, and in the credits there's a lot of like famous pieces. There was one piece when it came up, I'm like, oh yeah, that's from Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah,
it's the Gusty Garden Galaxy theme. And I on my YouTube channel, I uploaded almost 17 years ago when Iwata Asks interviews were happening for Super Mario Galaxy, the first one. And they were, remember the Iwata Asks articles? They used to come out online and they would talk about the development of like the first Mario game for the Wii, which was huge back then. There was a recording of an orchestra recording of the soundtrack, and I extracted the video file and I put it on YouTube. This was back in 2006, like YouTube was 1 year old.
Yeah.
And I put it on there and it had like 100,000 views. In the last month, it has gotten 500,000 views.
Wow.
In the last month. And I just wrote Gusty Garden Galaxy recording for Super Mario Galaxy. And I was like, oh, I heard this in the credits. It's so nice. And it's like, how many of these people are like fans versus just people who have stumbled upon it?
Yeah.
It's getting a lot of attention. The view rate's going up. So it's like,
wow.
Keep the fans engaged and you'll coast, you know? Just put in like the right amount of efforts and understand what grabs them emotionally. And it'll lift you.
The only thing I didn't mention was the music. For some reason, they still felt the need to put in licensed music in this movie from like the 80s.
We need a hero.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was weird.
I felt like that was not required. Like, there's enough music from the games that you can just leverage.
Yeah.
But yeah, that minor thing. But they probably didn't need that stuff. And that song's like way too overused.
Yeah, I think it's like it's in every single, like, I think it's already been used this year sometime.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was in, but it was in something this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like they kind of they felt a need to Shrekify it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As Shrek just had all these hits. And it's like, yeah, you're hearing the exact same songs from Shrek, which is like 20 years ago. And it's like, well.
They use that song in Shrek.
In Shrek 2.
They do. Yeah.
In Shrek 2 and the princesses will team up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, well, Nintendo would have given license to use all their soundtracks for this.
Yeah, because they've obviously used the sound cues in other parts of the movie. So I don't see why they just couldn't use the themes that they had from the games itself. Oh,
man. Yeah. There are some amazing themes they could have used. But again, I think it's part of its studio, part of it's maybe the director's vision of like, okay, they don't want to take it seriously. Again, they got to use like modern songs to ground people constantly to say like, oh, you know, we're using this. We're going to use, you know, rap artists. And that probably appeals to the youth. You know, we're not exactly Gen Z and Gen Alpha right now. So maybe that's what they need, you know, to
the kids
keep them grounded.
Would love it, yeah.
Yeah, to keep the kids grounded.
Cool. I think that's anything else to mention?
I haven't even seen this movie, so I don't know how I got through this.
Watch out for our Mario Kart review series. We review all the builds.
Yeah, we do each one. We choose every single configuration, combination.
I was way too into Mario Kart for a period. I was and Smash Brothers.
On the Wii, it was competitive.
Oh, yeah.
Like the worldwide leaderboards.
I was on that for a while, yeah.
You were on the worldwide leaderboards?
For one of the levels.
The Yoshi's level?
No, it was the Ghost one.
I was number one
in Australia for a little bit.
Nice.
For the time trial.
Which Ghost one?
It's like the NES Ghost one.
Oh, yeah. The short one, right?
It's the short one.
Yeah.
It's the one where you could jump across the... Yeah.
Pretty serious accolade. You should put that on your Tinder.
Put it on the resume. You might put it somewhere.
Put it on your Tinder. Yeah. Get matches, bro.
Your brother was also... He was number one in Australia for...
Yeah, Yoshi level. That was the small...
Yes.
Yoshi's waterfall level. Yeah, I remember. He was very proud of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they started hacking the system and you'd get these guys that would just like appear out of nowhere in front of you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like crazy times using the wheel.
Yeah.
The Japanese would always use the wheel and get like crazy times. So I was like, well.
I could just never use the wheel. I never got into it. I can't play with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't sensitive enough to like work. And it's actually harder using a wheel than to drive. Like normally, it's easier to use a joystick.
Yeah. Well, we come from the Mario 64 days where you had to use the joystick. So we're just like, all right, we'll stick to that.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Guess we'll wrap it up there. We could probably keep talking about Nintendo all day if we wanted to.
Oh, yeah. we could go on a massive rant about all the different like games and how they approached it.
So if people want to get in touch with us regarding Super Mario Bros. Or John Wick 4, how do they go about it?
So you can email us at cognitiverecalibrationpodcast@gmail.com or we're on all other social media platforms at Cognitive Recalibration.
Yep. If people want to get in touch with you, I know you're active on Twitter and also your YouTube channel, which you mentioned.
Oh, yeah. My YouTube channel's Orphanix. It's got random shit. It's got like some Nintendo clips. It's got nothing important. But I want to check out. If you want to check out Gusty Garden Galaxy, just type that in. But my Twitter is TheBarsGrimC, @BarsGrimC. And that's my handle for everything.
Cool. All right. Next week is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Back to Marvel.
Wow.
We'll see how this one goes.
It's got a dog in it as well. Maybe we need to do dog stuff just every week now.
Yeah, well, John Wick had a dog. It had a German Shepherd in this one.
Yeah.
And Mario doesn't have dogs.
But we did John Wick with
him. Oh, no, Mario does have a dog.
Yes, he does.
In
Yoshi's Island, right?
No, in the movie where they go to fix that lady's plumbing.
Oh, the Labrador.
Perfect. Every movie has a dog in it now.
I think it has to nowadays, right? Yeah. Otherwise, it's like, well, what's the point of watching if there's no dogs?
And, I was saying that dog looked like a lot like one of the dogs from Secret Life of Pets, which is
Illumination Studios.
Yeah, but it's a different dog.
Right.
But similar animation. Yeah.
Nice.
I would be keen to watch that movie with Remy to see what he thinks.
Secret Life of Pets?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He would
be
scared, I reckon.
Well, he's scared of his own reflection at the moment. Yeah. So.
I would watch Zootopia with Remy. That scene with the wolves howling, let's see how he reacts.
Well, I've watched a bit of Mandalorian with him, and he... kind of watched it.
Nice.
Yeah, like the parts when Baby Yoda like makes noises, he kind of looks up.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
It's probably like similar intellectual level to Baby Yoda. Probably not, actually. Probably
yes.
Less.
Yes.
Yeah. And we've got to do Mandalorian at some stage as well. Are you going to watch Mandalorian?
I might try and watch it.
Yeah.
I've seen one episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's.
Of season three?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. It's a good time.
It's got good parts, and it's got some episodes that are okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'll try and watch it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we won't do it next week anyway because we've got Guardians.
Yeah.
And
I think we've got a pretty packed schedule actually coming up because
Fast X is coming out soon.
Fast, your most anticipated movie of the year.
Fast X. Yeah. Fasten your seatbelts.
Yes.
This is a thing that people were actually posting. People in the movie are posting that in their caption when they're promoting the movie. So it's
didn't we say that would be a good way to like.
We said it a long time ago.
Yeah.
But like Charlize Theron and like Vin Diesel, they post a picture on Instagram and the caption's "Fasten your seatbelts."
But how do you know they're pronouncing it that way?
It says "Fast 10," like together.
Oh,
your seatbelts.
My God.
Yeah.
It's just mind-numbingly dumb and clever at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a couple of weeks after Guardians. So, nice. But pretty packed after that because there's Spider-Verse early June.
Yep.
There's Flash.
Ooh, which looks amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently.
Oh, we're not joking when we say that.
I actually think it looks really good.
Yeah.
I never expected, but this movie looks fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I can't believe they got Ezra Miller like in and wrapped him like in like the straitjacket and just put him inside Warner Brothers Studios in time for this. Like, that's so good they're doing. They actually delayed the film, I'm pretty sure, for him because of him.
Yeah, there were multiple delays.
Jeez. I'm hoping the best for this film. Yeah, it's looking like our kind of dreams come true for a Flashpoint movie.
If they put up something that's even serviceable, it's amazing given what they had to deal with.
And then in July we've got
Oppenheimer and Barbie. Yeah,
on the same day.
Oppenheimer and Barbie, that's a choice to make. What should I watch?
I'm slightly more keen for Barbie. Not even joking. I'm slightly more keen for Barbie.
Why? Yeah. Dude, either you're a Margot Robbie like OnlyFans or you're getting paid. You're getting paid by Mattel. Okay.
We'll see. I can see Barbie being the better of the two. Well, Oppenheimer will be good. I know what level Oppenheimer will be.
Yeah.
Barbie could be anything. Yeah.
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 It's got a good director as well.
Yeah.
Can't believe we're actually talking about these two as if they're comparable. You know, like a Christopher Nolan film versus Barbie.
Yeah.
It's like the antithesis of everything he believes.
I think we'll watch both that weekend and we'll decide which one's better. And I think Barbie might be better. I'm making the early call. I think Barbie's going to be better than Oppenheimer.
Yeah, you made this call a while back. Like, you made it last year.
All right, I'm making a pledge right now. If Barbie gets better reviews on whatever, like,
Has a higher Rotten Minus than Oppenheimer. Yeah.
I trust IMDb because they're a little bit more, like, even keel with their review algorithm.
Okay. Yeah.
IMDb. If Barbie has a better score than Oppenheimer on IMDb.
Yeah.
I'll open it up. It can be critics or users. I don't care, right?
Yeah.
I will eat a sock on this podcast. I will eat my sock on
you
this
better,
podcast.
You better get a sock ready.
I will boil that shit up and I'll eat it if it does better. Remember this.
Well, we'll get you back that weekend, the weekend both of those movies.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we'll have a video camera set up by then.
Yeah, we'll be video set up and we'll have the socks ready.
Legitimately, you got to do a whiskey shot because you can't eat a sock. You're going to get sick if you eat a sock. I don't want you to eat a sock.
I will eat a used sock. That's how confident I am.
Okay.
That Oppenheimer will do critically, not box office. I don't know what these kids are up to nowadays, but box office.
No, so the IMDb score, specifically the IMDb score will have to be better than, I'll take that deal. I'll do a whiskey shot if it's the other way around.
How's that comparable?
Well, I don't want to eat a sock. You're going to get sick. Also, you can't eat socks.
Watch me.
Remy will join you in that.
Remy doesn't eat socks. He just like chews on them for a bit. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Okay, Remy could eat my sock if Barbie's not as good as Oppenheimer.
You cannot offhand your bet.
All right.
You have to sleep with a Barbie doll for a week. That's the bit.
I'd do that anyway.
All right. Cool. That brings us to the end of this episode. What a way to end. So we've got a lot to look forward to in July, especially. But next week, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So hopefully it's good.
Cool. We'll see you there.
Looking forward to it.
Hope you're all staying safe, and we'll see you in the next one.
See ya.
See ya. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.